Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Tonight, I'm welcoming back Mary D. Brooks. She is an author and a playwright, and she's created this wonderful world of Zoe and Eva. She created a new book called Mabel of the Anzacs, which we are going to be doing as a radio play on Sherry's Playhouse. I'm really excited about that. And she has a new novella that's called Enemy at the Gate. Now, this show was recorded earlier, so please don't call in. Enjoy, Mary. Welcome to the show.
G'day. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you back. I mean, you are one of my favorite people.
Oh, thank you very much. You're one of my favorite, what should I call you?
I don't know, whatever you want to.
My friend. Interviewers. There you go.
Okay. Well, that's one of my jobs. I am an interviewer. You are multi-talented yourself. You write and you create really beautiful art, and you are you're great at helping me with book covers. So let's start with talking, because, I mean, you've been on a show several times, and we're going to talk about Mabel, our the wonderful radio play we're going to do. But first, I just want to talk about something a little different than we have before. When did you start with your creative drive? How did it first come about that you became aware of it? Were you a little girl?
In writing or art?
Anything.
I was seven or eight, and I started, I got annoyed, well, I think it was the $6 Million Man, but I got annoyed with the way the writers were writing the show, and I decided I can do a better job. I knew everything. I started writing scripts and rewriting the actual episode. What I didn't know at the time was that that was fanfic. But, I was seven or eight, and I started writing my own stories as well. And it started from there.
That's so funny, because that's about the same age I was. I did a little different. I loved Bewitched. I loved the TV series. And I used to have a walk home. Sometimes my dad would take me, and sometimes I'd walk. When I walked, I usually walk by myself. So in order to entertain myself, I create this whole world of my own attached to Bewitched. It was sort of like a little story land. It was like the birth of the fanfic, but I didn't know it. Like, you knew that I was doing that.
So it started from there, and I think fanfic is such a great way to hone your skill, because you don't have to create the new characters, you don't have to set the world, you don't have to do anything. It's already done for you, so all you have to do is create the story.
Yep.
And it started from there, yeah. So from there I just started writing stories, and lifted off, and I'm still doing it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because some people do that. Well, mine, I don't know if yours, it sort of sounds like the same, because mine, when I was writing those stories, was I wanted to be a part of the world, so I created this entire line in from the Bewitched family to my family, so I'd be related to them.
That was interesting.
And I figured out, because there is a part of my family I don't know at all. And
right.
So that was the part I used.
No, I didn't want to be in it. I just wanted to write it.
Rewrite it actually. And so I wanted to be the writer rather
than being in it. Maybe that was
my acting thing.
That's probably your acting thing. Me, not an actor. So, yeah.
But then when I started actually writing fan fiction was because mostly I was annoyed by how an episode ended, you know how obscure sometimes an episode ends? Like, it's supposed to leave the audience thinking, well, it drove me nuts!
I wanted to rewrite the whole damn thing because some parts didn't make any sense. So, so the seven-year-old thought they can do a better job than the veteran screenwriter. So I started writing scripts, so it was fun.
I think that's adorable.
Yeah.
Did you ever...
I was in my room, pencil, paper, and off she went.
Did you ever meet Lee Majors?
No.
He could have said, hey, I wrote some scripts when I was seven for your show.
No, I've never met Lee Majors or Lindsay Wagner. I would love to, but you know what they say about meeting your idols.
I know.
Yeah, so. That's where the bug started.
It's funny because I have a tendency to get very tongue-tied when I meet people like that. That are like...
Oh, okay.
I can't even... If I meet someone in person that I have admired for a long time, my voice is almost unrecognizable to me.
Is it goes up an octave?
Oh, yeah. And it's squeaky.
Hello, Mr. Majors. I am such a fan.
It's just so strange.
Yeah. So I prefer to idolize from afar.
I've had that happen a few times. And you're just like, after you walk away, you're mortified.
Yes. Then you're like, what the hell was that?
And usually...
It came out of me then.
And usually you say the most inane things like,
yes.
I really like your work. Duh.
I love your work, thanks. Which they haven't heard before in 1,000 years. Yet.
Yeah, I'm sure, like 2 billion times. I know, you're like, you walk away and you say, I could have said something intelligent or
yes.
thoughtful or insightful. Oh no, I really enjoy your work. With a high and squeaky voice.
Oh my god. Yes.
Do you have a person or a style of writing or something that you were inspired by and model your work by?
No. I read a lot. I don't write in the genre that I read, which is rather weird. But I like reading World War One or World War Two novels, but I haven't modelled myself on anybody. I just find that, this sounds pretentious, but I just find that inner voice that comes out, and I just write. I think that when I was back in 2001, I got some great advice from a writer, L.J. Musk, where she said, said to me, find your own voice, find it and don't copy. And which I was doing, but and I thought that was really good advice, because if you copy another writer's style, with nothing wrong with that, but you need to find your voice, and you need to find, because if you pick it up, if you pick up a book, I could do it with several authors. If I pick up a book without knowing the writer's name and start reading, I will know, oh, I know this is Sherry's work, or I know this is so-and-so's work by the writing style and the voice. And that's what I've tried to do.
See, that's interesting, because to be honest, I don't even know if I have a voice. I jump from whatever makes me interested. My first one was
your voice still carries over to whatever else you're doing.
Yeah.
Your writing style is still there. Your what's the word I could use? The thing that makes you is still there. Whether you're writing horror or whether you're writing romance or whatever it is, I still think the writer's voice is still there. So if somebody, there was an interesting discussion about a week ago about Patricia Cornwell, because I was a huge fan of Patricia Cornwell.
Mm-hmm.
And for those that don't know, Patricia writes a forensic anthropologist, forensic coroner, sorry. Her books really, really inspired me, because I was interested in that scenario. And she has a very distinctive voice. And for some reason, I could guess, but for some reason, that voice disappeared in her later novels. And I couldn't recognize that the person who was writing those novels. So the voice, or the writer's voice, is so important, because the readers and the fans of the books will get to know it.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Did you guys discuss what happened? Because, I mean, I've read Agatha Christie all my life, and even though her style is always different, her voice is always the same, even toward the end.
Well, that's exactly it. You pick up a book by Agatha Christie, and you know it's Agatha writing it, because it comes through the pages.
Right.
I'm not sure what happened to Patricia. Her novels were absolutely outstanding. I loved them. And two in particular that stand out is From Potter's Field and The Body Farm, I think it was called. And talk about brilliance, absolutely brilliant. I'm not sure what happened. And I haven't been able to read any of her work since, because I can't hear her voice.
That's interesting.
I'm not dissing Patricia. It's sort of like, I can't do it. I can't read it.
No, I mean, it's probably a change of her voice, and that original voice is what attracted you. I just find it fascinating, because what you were just saying about my work is that my voice is in all of my work.
Yes, it is.
So
I can hear it.
That's very
interesting. And I can see it. So,
nothing against Patricia, she's brilliant.
Patricia is brilliant. Her books were brilliant. I haven't read any of her novels beyond, I think, 2000. Because I try, and I pick them up, and I can't hear her. But I do enjoy her previous novels. They were absolutely amazing.
because it's interesting because you know me, so you know I get really into an author, and sometimes I go back to that author. Like lately, I've been on Agatha Christie kick, and I started from the beginning, and I'm going all the way through. And I don't mean the beginning of a certain character. I mean right from the beginning of her writing. And you see the maturity, you see all the things she learned, and you see that she was changing with the times, but her voice never changes.
Yes, that's exactly it. And with Agatha Christie, that was brilliant, right? And she brought you into the story, and she held it and held it until the very last moment when she reveals whatever she reveals. But whoever writes murder mysteries, and I don't think I can write a murder mystery because I'm not that good in setting that up. They should study Agatha Christie.
Oh, yeah.
I try and play a game whenever I'm reading a novel, you second guess the author. And more times than not, I can guess what will happen. There are a few authors that just totally blindside me. And Agatha always blindsided me. I remember one time I was reading, I think it was 10 Little Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I had figured it out. I was so smart. I thought I had figured it out, finally. And she... the ending just blew me away. And I think it was one of the few times I actually sat up in bed and started clapping. Nobody could hear it. I'm sure the ghost of Agatha Christie could. But it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant.
She said in her autobiography she was most proud of Ten Little Indians because it was very different and it was very meticulous how she had to craft it.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
Oh my God. That book is one of my favorite novels because where I thought she was going with it was nowhere where it ended. And it was just brilliant.
One of the other books she wrote, well, she wrote a few of them like that, that just, like you said, gobsmacks you. But Murder in the Orient Express, if you don't know what happens in it, and I'm not going to spoil it if you've never read it.
Yeah, I have.
You do not know what is going to happen. You do not. You think you see where Perrault's going with it, and you think you know what he's going to do, but you don't. And the other one she did that to was Curtain, which was.
I haven't read that.
That's Perrault's last book.
All right.
There's no secret in it that he dies during that book.
Spoiler.
No, it's not a spoiler because it actually says that on the back of the book.
He dies. Don't read the book.
No, but that's not the thing that gobsmacks you. You have to read the book. Believe me, that is the least surprising thing of the whole book.
Well, Agatha was an absolute legend. She still is.
She's, I
absolute
think...
absolute legend.
She was the first author... She and Ellery Queen, sort of head-to-head, those two, even though Ellery Queen is two different people, but those two series of books, when I was a little girl, was the first books that really... I'm still a mystery fan, but those were the first books that I just could not stop getting. I would, you know, every Hanukkah, every birthday, I'd be, can I have a new Ellery or Agatha, please?
Yeah, but with every book, with Agatha, is you know her voice and you know her, you recognize her voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I think every writer has a voice, even if they try and copy somebody else's voice, it will morph into their own voice. So Yeah. Don't copy anyway.
Yeah, don't copy. Be, just be you.
Yeah.
Be yourself.
Yeah. Eventually you'll find your groove and run with it.
And the thing is that one of the things I enjoy is reading different styles of books. Now, are you more, like, it took me forever to get my father to read something other than science fiction. I finally got him to read murder mysteries and Harry Potter toward the end of his life. But his whole life, classic murder mysteries, classic science fiction is all he ever read. Do you have one thing, or are you in like me, more like me with a myriad of different kinds of styles, if you like?
I like murder mysteries. I like political thrillers. I'm not too much into romance, even though I wrote it. I like whatever grabs my attention. If the story sounds great, I will have a go at it. It all depends, and if I know the author, I will read whatever they've written without reading the blurb, because I like the author. But I like, predominantly, I like murder mysteries, political thrillers, and medical stuff.
Did you ever read Agatha's autobiography? Because that's how I found out about other authors. She was talked about, this is one person I really admire, and this is another person I admire. Have you ever gone to another author because the author you admire admired them?
No. Because their taste may be different to mine.
Oh.
I've had friends say, oh, you have to try so-and-so. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll give it a go. And I do. But not if an author has done it. More, I would take a friend's advice more than an author's advice. No apparent reason. It's just if a friend of mine suggests something, they know my taste and would say, "Oh, you're gonna really love this." So I do that. Yeah.
That's interesting. I'm weird. I have this weird tendency. Like, one of the... one of the authors that Agatha loved was Dorothy Sayers. And I had never even heard of her or Lord Peter Wimsey. And so I bought a book of Dorothy Sayers' Lord Peter Wimsey, the first book, without ever hearing about it, and I didn't know anything about it except that Agatha liked, and she said she was the best mystery writer in her opinion.
Agatha was wrong about that. Because Agatha is the best.
Well, I agree. But I love Dorothy. Dorothy's actually one of the hardest books to read because she puts a lot of French and Latin in there, and you have to get translation in order to understand how some of the things end.
No, that would just turn me off. I really don't want to do hard work when I'm reading fiction.
Well, I didn't know it at the time. I mean, even when Peter asks later on in the novels, Peter falls in love with a novelist named Harriet. Forgot Harriet's last name. Anyway, he falls in love with this novelist named Harriet, and he asked her to marry her in Latin, and it made me insane. And that was before the internet, so I went to a bookstore, got a book, one of those translation books in Latin, looked up the words, and then put the book back. I didn't buy the translation book, I just needed to find out what it was.
That's too much hard work. You pick up a book and you're supposed to be entertained. You're not supposed to be scouring the dictionary trying to figure out what they're saying.
But she is a really really good writer. I highly, highly recommend her because she is, the Lord Peter's a lot of fun and it's really a good series, but yeah, she makes you work. But also...
I like to be entertained rather than actually do some work.
Well, Agatha is supposed to be the third highest seller of books. Of all books, of all time.
Oh, I believe it. There's another one that I absolutely adore. Pearl Buck.
Oh, yeah.
The Good Earth.
Good Earth.
That is one of my favorite books and one of my favorite movies. Yeah, Pearl Buck is just brilliant.
My mom introduced me to her. Not to her personally, to the book. She loved her, and she's like, she says, you love history, you have to read this. And then when the movie came on, you have to watch this. Louise Rainer is brilliant. I mean, it was a mandate.
The movie just blew me away. The locust scene in that movie was just, it was filmed without special effects. It was brilliant.
It was.
So, history books I love, murder mysteries I love, and authors who grab your attention and not let go until the last page is awesome.
I agree. I'm going to transition a little now. We are working together on a radio play. It comes.
Whee!
it's our third.
It's our third baby. Yes.
Yes, this is our third collaboration. This one is based on her amazing novel, which is called Mabel of the Anzacs: A Friendship for the Ages. Really good. I am on chapter 3.
We get all the fireworks.
Yep. And the play is a two-parter. First part is the season, second part is next season. And we are just starting rehearsals. So how do you feel? Well, first tell a little bit about your book and how you were inspired to write about Mabel.
I have to start by how it all started. In book 2 of, excuse me, my series, Zoe gets a motorcycle a motorcycle. And for some strange reason, she called it Mabel. I didn't know why she called it Mabel. It wasn't Greek in any way. And Zoe has a tendency to name everything. Everything gets a name. The icebox, the bread box, everything gets a name. And everything has a Greek name because she's Greek. But her crossbow in Enemy at the Gate, which is part of an anthology called The Darkest Hour, has a name, and it's Artemis. So everything gets a name with her. And I called it Mabel, and I couldn't figure it out why. Anyway, so about a year ago, I did a blog post. No, I did a Twitter post, I think. And basically said that she called her because of a story that her landlady told her. And I was thinking about this, and I thought, I'll do a blog post. So I started doing a blog post, and then I looked at it and I thought, this is interesting. I think I'm going to do write a little novella. The novella turned into a novel, and it was quite surprising to me how it evolved. It actually evolved before my eyes, and It was amazing. Turns out, I had been reading a World War One book about World War One nurses and the heroics of the nurses, true, genuine heroes. And you don't know a lot about them because, you know, nurses and women don't always get the attention they deserve in history. And I wanted to go back to that, but I also wanted to stay in my world with Eva and Zoe. And I thought, oh, this is going to be, let's combine the two. So I created a novel where a World War One nurse called Mabel Andrews gets introduced to Zoe and Eva, and I took it from there.
I think it's really interesting how the muse kind of works, because you don't know where ideas come from. In fact, I was reading a novel, and in the novel, the author was, the character was a writer, and she says, it's so strange that I've written a character who's smarter than I am.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I had no idea where Mabel came from. It just popped into my head and go, well, okay, that's Mabel. And that was in book two, which was written in 2002. And I didn't know any Mabels. I hadn't thought of any anybody like that. And then it just popped into my head and I wrote it, and I'm thinking, what a strange name to name a motorcycle. So that's where the idea came from. And as I started writing it, I thought, damn, this is awesome. Good job, Mary. Thought of this back in 2002. It took you a long time to get it written. But awesome not in the way of the writing. I'm not going to big note myself there or pat myself on the head. But it's awesome in the way it worked out. And I wish I could say I control it, but I don't. I have zero control over my characters. But it turned out into a interesting book.
Isn't it weird? Have you ever, like, picked up a book or a story that you hadn't read that you had written, like, maybe a few years back, and you reread it for some reason or other, and you went, oh, my God, I wrote this?
Yes. It happens all the time.
I know. It's like, you're just like, whoa, I don't even remember writing.
That's what happens to me after I've written a chapter. It goes out of my head after I've written it. It's gone. I may have been thinking about it for days on end on how to write it, what to say, blah, blah. And then I've written it and it's out of my head. It's gone.
It's weird. It's just weird how the mind works. Like, I'm working on the novel right now, and I'm working on the proofs for the novel. And that's always more difficult than the actual novel, at least as far as I'm concerned. Because it's editing, and I hate editing. It's just necessary, but it's not my favorite thing. And so, for my weird self, my release of my tension is to write fan fiction. And I was like, I had the, you get these things that nibble on your mind and won't leave you alone until you write it down. And it's the weirdest thing. And then once you get it out, it's gone, and then you go, oh, God, second part, nibble, nibble, nibble.
Yeah. Well, it stays in your head. It stays in your head, and it goes, and it goes, and it goes, and you either have to do something about it, or you're going to go crazy.
Yep.
So I thought, oh, my God, I need to get this out of my head. So once it's out, it's out.
Yep. Yeah, it's like peaceful. It's not bothering you anymore. It's gone.
Until the next idea comes.
That's what I mean. I finally finished restructuring my proofs, and I was like, and I thought, oh, okay, peace. I can just sit back and read a book. Oh, no, no, no. Nibble, nibble, nibble. Next part fan fiction story is there. I'm like, leave me alone.
Yes. There's no peace for the insane. Oh, no, we're not insane. There's no peace. There's no peace for the creative, I think, because there's always a new idea that springs in your head and you've got to do something about it. You know, that's how Ozzy, my site was born. The idea just would not leave me alone. And I thought, if I don't do something about it, it's going to drive me nuts. So I thought, you know, I'll do it. I'll lose interest in about 2 or 3 weeks.
Creative people have. It's just like when you're working out something for your characters and you're laying in, I don't know if you do this, but I'm sure you do. You're laying in bed and you have this entire conversation that you're not having. It's just going on in your head between your characters, and you're like, okay, that's where I'm going. Okay, thank you. And you're just like, shut up, and you go and you write it up. But it's just this weird, you don't have control over it. It just pop.
No control whatsoever. I remember once I was writing a book two, and I was trying to figure out the layout of the of their apartment for a thing that I needed them to be closer to the door for something. And I wrote myself into a corner, and I'm thinking, oh, crap. So I get up and draw an actual plan for the apartment. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I've drawn myself into a corner here. I need to get out of it. And I draw this elaborate plan of this apartment. And I have to stop and think. I have to stop because I laugh at myself because I'm thinking, you know, this is fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You can change it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, yeah, you can have the baseball bat over near the door. It's okay.
But it's weird. It's just like you paint yourself in a corner, but it's like your characters, they don't like certain things. They tell you in their own way that they don't want to do it the way you want to do it. They want to do it the way they want to do it. And you try to explain to somebody who doesn't write, and they're like, what do you mean they're telling you? They're you. And I go, but you don't understand.
They're not you.
They're not. They're in there, but they're not me.
I don't know where the hell they come from, but I would start a chapter knowing exactly where I want to go with it, and then end up somewhere totally different because the character went totally different. And I'm thinking, oh, you're not very good, Mary, are you? So, like, this is not where we're supposed to go. Oh, well, such is life.
Well, that's why I actually stopped doing... when I first started writing, I used to write little synopsis of what I wanted to go and have it all structured out. I write notes. I write notes and ideas, but I don't fence myself in with a structure because I know my characters will never listen to me.
I said to my editor, I am going to write an outline, and I'm going to stick to this outline. Yeah, that's what she said. And I'm going to stick to this outline, and because I never write with an outline. I have a general idea of where I'm going to go, but I never stick to an outline. But for book six, I said, I am going to write an outline and stick to it. Yeah, it took me 2 years to write that novel.
Mm-hmm.
I've written six different versions of it. And they're all on my editor's computer. And it got to the point of just, oh my God, I have so many ideas. There's six different books. So writing an outline is not my thing.
I mean, there are some people who can do that. There are. I usually have a structure in my mind, but I don't have an outline, and I don't write things down. I have notes, I have ideas, I have stuff to keep my stuff cohesive. Like, I have a running line of notes, so the chapters stay the same and they're cohesive. But an actual outline, no. I my mind just won't work that way.
Yeah, you're a pantser.
Mm-hmm.
You write by the seat of your pants.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Sort of like riding one of the old airplanes from World War I.
Yes. And hope you don't crash.
And pray you don't crash.
Anyway, so
off to the play now, dear.
Yes.
So how did the... Because we finished Zoe's Promise, and you said, oh, I'm finishing a new book, it'll be great for the play. How did you make that leap?
After I finished the novel, because it's such a character-driven story, it's not action-driven, it's more character-driven. And I'm thinking, you know, this will make a really good play, because what you have is the personalities of Zoe and Mabel are so well defined and so such interesting characters that I thought it would come across as a radio play really well, because with radio action it kind of gets lost in the ether, but with radio, the characters and the dialogue is what's important. And after writing this book, I thought this will make a really, really good radio play.
Cool.
And that's where I left.
It's a very different thing because it's a prequel. It's before.
Well, it slots in between book 2 and 3. And what it does is it fills in some of the gaps between 2 and 3, which I didn't outline in the novels, because obviously you can't put everything in the novels because it'll be like War and Peace. it's a little slice of their life that answers so many questions and introduces one of the most pivotal character, an influential character in their lives, which I hadn't mentioned in the previous books. So that's how it came about, yeah.
And, I like how the whole family's there. I mean, Elena's there, and Henry's there, and Earl's there. So it's not like we're separated from those plays. It's more like it's all, like you said, integrated with it.
Yes. And if we're putting it in the timeline of the radio plays, this would go before Zoe's Promise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I meant it was a prequel.
Yeah.
Is it after Widgie? It's after Widgie too. I mean, it's before Widgie too.
Yes, it's before Widgie, because Zoe has Mabel in Widgie. Before Widgie, before Widgie, and before Zoe's Promise.
So it is a prequel.
Yeah, it is.
That's cool. So.
All right.
Do you have, we're coming to the end of the show. I just wanted to know, do you have anything that you want to let the listeners know? Oh, first, Mabel's Out, how do you get it?
On Amazon, on iBooks, on Nook, on various other bookstores. It's available in print. Yes.
And if they want to get in touch with you and say hi?
They can contact me on my website, which is nextchapter.net, and I'll say hi back.
Okay, and do you have anything you want to say about the upcoming radio play that's coming on December 15th of Mabel?
Yes. It's a study in how two people can be so different, but can be also so the same. And it's about family, but not necessarily whose blood runs through your veins. Family can be somebody else. You can choose your family.
That's beautiful.
And I've also got another book coming out in January as part of a 10-author anthology on World War II resistance. And my novella is called Enemy at the Gate. And that is, we first meet a 13-year-old, Zoe, and how she got involved in the resistance.
Cool.
So, yeah, that is, I had fun writing that. So that's coming out on January 22, and that's available at pre-order if anybody wants to, from Amazon, iBooks, and elsewhere.
And do you have anything coming up that you're going to be able to see the fans in person?
Yes, I'm going to the Zenite Retreat in April of next year. I think that's about it.
Cool.
In appearances or going to places.
Any online stuff?
Sorry?
Any online stuff? Any online?
I've got a book club if people want to subscribe to. That's at on Facebook. If you look under Mary D's book club, where I get, I do giveaways and all sorts of things.
So you want to do a giveaway, so tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I would like to offer 5 copies of Mabel to 5 lucky listeners. And they'll also get a commemorative coin by the Australian Mint, which commemorates 100 years of Anzac featuring a World War I nurse. And a key ring, which has a World War I nurse on it, in the full nursing outfit, including the red collar. And, yes.
Cool. And is there a keyword that they can use when they apply?
Chatting.
Chatting? Okay. And can you give where it is? It's your book club on Facebook. Is there a website or something?
Yeah, there will be a website. It'll be nextchapter.net/chattinggiveaway, and people can enter there.
Cool. Thank you for that. You're so sweet.
Oh, you're welcome. Anything for you, Sherry.
Aww. Well, thank you so much for, you're very sweet, and I appreciate that. Thank you so much for coming on. I love chatting with you.
Thank you. I love chatting to you, too.
And thank you for listening to Chatting with Sherry.